Welcome to Building the Game, a documentary podcast. My name is Rob, and with me, as always, is Jason.
Hey, Rob.
How's it going, man?
It's going great.
What you been up to?
Not a lot.
No?
No. Making a podcast, that's kind of sweet.
No way, me too.
Yeah!
Whoa! That's a great
idea.
I'm going
to listen to your podcast sometime. That'd be awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
Probably sucks.
Probably. I know yours well. Dude, I smashed my thumb.
Smashed your
thumb? I smashed my...
How did you smash your thumb?
Working on your stupid podcast. You almost did a spit take
there. I almost did a spit take there. I see that there are these amazing blankets hung over the wall here.
Yeah. So, like, just for the listeners here, we're recording this in my home office here at Poorly Designed Studios. And let me tell you, Poorly Designed is about as accurate as you can possibly get. we're in our home office, and this is my house. This is... My computer room and my art room, and it's the main computer in the house, and it's where my wife pays our bills and stuff. So I can't really afford to put a bunch of soundproofing material up on the walls full time, and I'm not about to nail a bunch of blankets everywhere. So I had the bright idea of taking some blankets and putting little metal eyelets into them. And in order to do that, you have to hammer them together. And I sure did hammer my thumb and my finger, actually.
This is why by trade you're not like a carpenter or something.
No. No carpenter.
You hurt yourself.
I did.
If we have a project where you need to use like a skill saw, maybe let's get someone else. Because you might have trouble editing the podcast with no fingers.
With no fingers. Hey, well, you know, it's always a chance. It's always a risk.
It's a risk.
Yeah.
It is a big risk.
What you been playing, Jason?
What have I been playing? Lately I've been playing Lawless, which is it's a cowboy rancher game.
Yeah.
It's made by who makes it? I think this Descartes.
You got the box right there.
I do have the box right there, and I think it's published in America by Blue Games.
Blue Games.
But it's a great little game. The goal of the game is just to be a rancher in the Wild West.
Yeehaw.
Yes, yeehaw. It's made by Bruno Cathala.
Hey, I like that guy.
I could be pronouncing his name wrong.
Probably are.
I could be pronouncing his name wrong. Bruno is a popular name over there in the Europe, I guess.
Yeah.
But anyways, it's been a fun game. I've been playing it for a few years now, and I just picked it up again recently.
Mm-hmm.
It's got a lot of cool stuff. You're just trying to manage this ranch while people are trying to steal your cattle, and your cattle are trying to run away, and it's got some comedy to it. And
it looks like a card game?
Yeah, it's a card game. Yep, it's mostly just a card game. It's got one board that sits in the center for buying new resources and such.
Okay.
And it's based on an action point system, so you have 6 action points a turn that you can use, and it works pretty well. It's it's a fun game. It works really well for 2 people. For 2 people, you actually play as if there were 4 players. You have 2 separate ranches.
Oh, okay.
Which is kind of fun because you can just do good stuff for your one ranch and kind of screw the other one. And
set one up to fail to help the other.
Exactly. Okay. So, but it also is really fun with 4 people.
Yeah.
It's got an interesting point system for determining the winner at the end.
Okay.
It's similar to Stone Age with the way it's counted at the end.
We talked about Stone Age last week.
Yeah. So it's got you calculate points at the end, so you can have an idea of who's gonna win, but you don't really know when you end the game who's gonna win.
Mm.
So.
Okay.
Yeah. It's a pretty fun game.
Right on.
What about yourself?
Well, I sat down with the wife over the weekend, and we played Bone Wars.
Bone Wars, yeah.
Yeah, we got that at Gen Con, 08, 09? 08.
08. Gen Con 08.
Yeah.
I have it too.
Yeah, Zygote Games.
Yep.
We met the guy there, James Cambius. He was a cool dude.
Look at you remembering that.
Hey, he made an impression on me. And his game did too.
Yeah, he was a good guy.
He was. Yeah, Bone Wars. I was just tickled by the whole idea of it. It's based in 19th century America with all these early paleontologists going out into the field to try and dig up dinosaur bones and then coming back into the scientific community to put together these skeletons and you know, try and be the big man, you know, the guy who had all the great big discoveries. And it's a card game. It's, so it's about going out and finding bones and just throwing them all together to build a dinosaur skeleton without really caring a whole lot whether you're putting the right parts together. And then you play cards to kind of mess with each other, to, you know, you got to swap out a head or something. And, oh, I found the right head for your skeleton. Huh? You're an idiot. and it's all about getting prestige and being the most popular scientist, the popular paleontologist.
Right, right. And if I remember the guy's speech, it was that Zygote Games wanted to be educational and entertaining at the same time.
Yeah. So that was kind of his thing. And you know, and it's a neat take on history and on early paleontology, that early branch of science. Didn't go real well, though. It's a card game, so it's really balanced for four players.
Uh-huh.
You can play it with two, but it falls apart a little bit. Each round of the game is played in three phases. The first phase, you go out and you go prospecting to find dinosaur bones. The second phase is you go into your museum phase where you put together skeletons. Then your third phase is it's like your community phase or something where you open up your museum to the community to let them judge you, and that's how you gain prestige. The problem is, in order to build a skeleton, you need three different pieces. You need like a head, you need feet, you need a spine. Okay.
Uh huh.
You also then need a name to put with that.
Okay.
In my first turn, I didn't get any cards that were names, so I couldn't build any skeletons. And since I didn't have any skeletons to put together in my first turn, I then wasn't able to do anything on the you know, second and third phase of that first turn, because mm-hmm. I also didn't get any cards that allowed me to mess with my opponent. And so I wasn't able to play any cards, so I wasn't able, at the start of the next turn, I wasn't able to draw anything back into my hand, so I was just stuck with the hand I started with. And Christine won in three turns. She won the game, and I didn't get anything. I was just stymied.
So can you just discard cards to...
Well, the rules don't say anything about that, but if we play again, we're going to have to house rule that.
So how do you... If you just have the cards you have, and they're no mm-hmm. good, you just can't ever do anything?
That's the way it went for me, yeah. Which was frustrating, right? So that's a balance issue, and that's the kind of thing that we're going to have to think about, you know?
Right, right.
As we get into this stuff, we're going to have to be aware of things like balance and potential pitfalls like that, and make sure we're watching out for ways around that. So, I mean, that's one reason why I was excited to talk about that today, because I think that's a potential pitfall we need to look out for.
That's a good point. You know, especially to... what's sticking me is the idea that you could get a bad hand.
Yeah.
And just, I do remember that my wife and I played it one time, and I don't remember enjoying it that much with two people. I know we had played it with a group of us.
We did, yeah.
And loved it.
Yeah.
So that must really be a scaling issue. See, and that's mm-hmm. a bummer for me, because you and I have talked before. I don't know if we mentioned this in the last show or not, but we're usually looking for two-player games.
Yeah, right.
That scale, because it's fun to play four-player games, mm-hmm. but, you know, a lot of times we play the card games and stuff with our wives, and so right. we're looking for those games that are just one versus one, you know?
Right. We're adults, so, and we have lives, and we can't right. always get together a group of four people specifically right. to play board games.
Right, right. Well, and there's so many that, you know...
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
I mean, I own, like, 100 games, so, yeah. you know, the idea that I would get together to play all of them with some other people that I don't yeah. live with is, right. is kind of difficult.
It's so. Tough. It's real tough, yeah.
But no, that's interesting to think about yeah. in balancing, to make sure that, you know...
Yeah.
If it's going to be a two-player game, that it does scale for two players.
Yeah, see, that. So that's real important. It's something that I, as we move forward in this and I try and come up with my own ideas, I want to make sure I can do things that scale well. And if it's technically playable for two people, but isn't as good an experience, that's the kind of thing I want to tell people in advance so they know.
Right, I've seen that on some games where it'll say one to five player, I mean, mm-hmm. 2 to 5 players best with, four.
Yeah, yeah, right.
You know, so...
And that's an important thing, I think.
Yeah, and it's good to let people know that. I mean, yeah. you hate the thought that people might not buy your game because of that, but...
But you don't want to cheat people.
No, you want to be honest, yeah. so...
Right. Yeah. So, moving on, you had a mechanic of the week today to talk about, I think.
I do. I mentioned the game Lawless we were playing. Yeah. I wanted to talk a little bit about Lawless and the... It's got a purchasing mechanic in the game. So basically every turn you have 6 action points you get to spend.
Okay.
You can spend those doing whatever you want. But everything costs action points. Some cards cost an action point to play. But the purchasing mechanic that I'm talking about is, so you get this board, which you can see it here. You guys at home can't see it, so I'll describe it. Basically, it's a board that holds 6 cards horizontally.
Mm-hmm.
It's numbered 1 through 6. That's the cost of each card. So when you start the game, you fill up all those spaces. And that's how many action points it would cost to buy the card. So if I buy a 1 point card off here, then at the end of my turn, all the cards shift down and we put a new card on the sixth spot, right? So when a card first comes out, it's going to be super expensive.
Yeah.
And then as you go down, you know, it's going to slide down on the scale. So what interests me about this mechanic is there's no preset value to the card. The value is what are you willing to sacrifice to get that card?
Ah, okay.
Now, there could be a turn where, you know, if somebody wanted to spend all six action points, they could buy the one card, the two card, and the three card, right? There's six. So you then may be getting a good card, you know, would pop in at 4 points instead of six, you know, because three new cards would come in.
Yeah.
But the idea that you'd be buying this, you know, you can choose to buy this six card thing, or you know, the value can change based on, because some of the cards that come through, like it's a cow, right? Well, if I've got a lot of cows, or I don't have any fences to protect my cows, I really don't care about buying a good cow, right? Because I'm just going to lose it.
Sure.
But if I'm somebody who's got all these crazy fences and I just really need some cows, I might pay six for a cow, which somebody else would think is stupid. So I like the idea of that, to have that kind of sliding cost mechanic in there.
Yeah.
I think that could be applicable to a lot of different scenarios. The only other game I've seen anything like that in is Stone Age, which has a 4 point system that works about the same way. Have you seen that in any other games?
Not off the top of my head. I have in Small World. They do have a function for that, because, you know, that's like Risk, but instead of sticking with one army for the whole game, you hire this army of fantasy characters, and you just basically exhaust that whole species. You just run them down into the ground, and when you've exhausted the usefulness of that species, you put them into decline. That's what the mechanic is. But you just abandon them out in the world, and you go off and hire another group of fantasy creatures to work for you. But every time somebody buys a new race of fantasy creatures, everything in that list shifts up from like the main pool, and then the value, the cost to each of those guys, or excuse me, no, that's a little different, because you have to, how does that work? Okay, so you have a stack of those, or you have a list of those fantasy creatures, and whoever's in the first position is free. You can get them for free. Okay.
Oh, so if you have to put your people in decline, you could automatically just take whoever's there.
Yeah, that's
who's next up.
Right.
Okay.
But let's say you want the creatures that are in fourth position. Okay, you have to spend a coin. You have to spend three coins to get there. So you put one coin on whoever's in the first position, one coin on the person who's in the second position, another coin on the person who's in the third position, and then you take that race that's in the fourth position. So then the next guy to come along, if he takes whoever's in first position, not only does he not have to spend a coin on that, when he takes that race, he also gets that coin that you put there before.
Okay, so you're actually benefiting. You're getting what you want, but in turn you're benefiting your opponents.
Right, exactly. But it also has that function with those races shifting up those cards, those tiles that they use for shifting forward in the order, and those values change then as you go. So a little different.
And that does remind me with the Lawless game, with that sliding scale, it does make you think about what you're buying.
Yeah.
Right.
Sure.
Because if I'm gonna buy three cards off the bottom rung, and I know that somebody wants that six card, you know, that just made it very cheap for them. Alternatively, I could maybe buy the card to block them from buying it, even though I don't want it, but I know that they need the card.
Yeah.
And I've certainly seen that happen before in the games, where a card comes up and that's the card. Like there's a mechanic in the game where you can play a card called, I think it's called Indian Raid.
Okay.
So basically what happens is, one of your lands is taken over by Indians that are running in and like going after you. Well, the only way to get rid of those Indian raid cards is with the cavalry. So if I see that cavalry card come out, I could block it by spending all my points to purchase it, just to stop my opponent from being able to free up that piece of land. And what's so good about that is if they have a prime piece of land, they could have two or three cows on that piece of land that could be ready to give them a bunch of money. So by locking it down, no one can get to anything on there. So there is some similarities there about how, you know, you're helping your opponents by doing something.
Yeah.
And I like that idea. I like that idea that you're a mechanic that you're using that also aids your opponent. I was looking at that garden dice game again that I backed on Kickstarter, and I noticed that there's a watering mechanic mm-hmm. where you have to water your seeds to turn them into plants. But all the plants are interconnected. So if I water mine, but yours is next to mine, you're going to benefit from that as well.
Oh, okay.
Right?
Yeah.
So I think it's interesting to make mechanics where I do something to help me, but mm-hmm. it's also going to help you. So thanks for bringing that up with Small World, because that's a good point. That's a good point.
Yeah, right on. I like that. I think that's something that's, it's easy to integrate, I think, you know, in terms of materials, you know. I don't think that would be difficult to put into a game, like in the scale that we're looking for.
Right, right. Yeah. No, I agree.
That's good. That's cool. Interesting. Right on.
All right.
Yeah, cool. Well, if that's all you got, then I think we'll move on to our next segment here.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, practicing the pitch. And it's my turn this week to pitch a game.
It is.
And I thought that I might talk about this card game idea that I've had, since you brought up a card game last time.
Yes, I did.
When we first started talking about game design a while ago, we kind of talked and I was trying to think of game ideas, game themes, you know, stuff that might be a little different, a little less common. And like you had talked about zombie stuff last week, and there's mm-hmm. a lot of zombie stuff out there. So zombies are really marketable right now. It's big. It's popular. Lots of zombies out there.
Maybe you've heard of it. Yeah.
Yeah. So I was trying to think of something that maybe was not quite as in your face, I guess. I don't know. Maybe that's not the right term to use. But something not quite as popular, as well known. But that would still be interesting to people. And I thought, well, what about just keeping it simple and just saying, rather than some specific genre, what if we just said action movie?
Okay.
So what if I did action movie the card game?
Okay.
Now, I don't know if you've ever played a game called Colosseum.
No, I've heard you talk about it.
Yeah, okay. The idea of Colosseum is that you are a, I don't know, some big dude in Rome, all right? Or in the Roman Empire. And the emperor is traveling around his kingdom, or it wouldn't be a kingdom because he's an emperor, not a king, but traveling around his Roman territories, whatever, and he's moving from place to place, and each player is a different leader in one of those communities, and you're trying to put on these elaborate shows in your Colosseum to impress the emperor, okay? And it's a process of, and it's a board game, and you're moving your pieces around a board, and you're trying to put down tiles to build the biggest Colosseum you can, and you're getting resources to put on these crazy elaborate stage shows. And I thought, well, what if you could simplify that and make it a card game where you're making the craziest, most insane action movie you ever could.
Okay.
So you start out by trying to raise money. Okay. And you raise money, maybe just by going to a studio, or you got to go to foreign investors, or just random stuff to do an independent film. And depending on what you do and where you go, we'll tell you how much money you're going to get. You can then spend that money on a script.
Okay.
And there would be different kinds of scripts. You know, there'd be the buddy cop movie, and there would be the, you know, the terrorist attack movie. And each of these scripts would have its own movie title name and, you know, its own custom movie poster to go on the card for that.
Right.
So you got to spend money on a script. And that script will say you need a heroic male lead, and you need a sexy female love interest, and you need an evil male villain, and you need two action scenes. Okay. And so you have these cards, and as you're playing the game, you're getting cards, and some cards will be actors to be in your movies. Some cards will be scenes, you know, like the car chase, or the missile launch, or the SEAL incursion, or something, you know?
Right.
And you're trying to get these cards, and each of these cards is going to cost you money to play. You might have them in your hand, but you're going to have to spend money from your budget to put them in play,
right.
to put your movie together. You might also, though, get a card where you could say, pay the writers a little bit more, and if you can spend money to pay the writers more, they might be able to add a scene to your movie. which down the road might benefit you and your profits.
Okay, okay.
You might be able to bribe the critics to get you a better review, which would get you more profits down the road.
Right, right.
You might also be able to play cards to mess with your opponents, like you might be able to play a writer's strike to prevent everybody else around you from adding anything to their movies. Or you might be able to bribe a critic to give somebody else a bad review.
Okay.
Okay. And so you're putting these things together, and you might end up having two or three scripts in development at a time and working on two or three movies at a time to try and get your production through. And whoever, of course, at the end of the game, whoever has the most money, who's never made the most money from these movies, is the winner.
Right.
Okay. Now, there'll be a lot of mechanics in there, be a lot of balancing to do, and I don't know what all of that would be yet. But that's the idea that I've got bouncing around in my head for that.
No, I like that. I think it's an interesting idea. One of the things that pops into my head for balancing would be, you're mentioning all these different kind of phases, right? How would you balance, for instance, if I'm trying to get money, right?
Mm-hmm.
How am I limited to cards trying to get money? If you just got a standard deck of cards, right?
Yeah.
I mean, are you thinking like multi-deck or...
Well, you'd have to... Yeah, I'm thinking multi-deck. You would probably need a deck... obviously, we need the deck of scripts, right?
Right.
And I don't know how many cards there would be in there. There would be your general resources deck, which would be all of your characters and all of your scenes and so on and so forth.
Right, right. Okay?
And then you would probably need an investor deck.
Okay, okay.
Okay, so that you can specifically target to raise money.
Right.
And you could go for that anytime you want, of course. But yeah, I think you would probably need those three different pieces. Now, another idea I had, though, of course, is let's say you're gonna hire an actor.
Mm-hmm.
And depending on whether it's an A-list or B-list or C-list celebrity that you're getting in there, will guarantee you a certain amount of money when the picture is finished.
Right, right, right. That makes sense.
So if you pull an Arnold Schwarzenegger kind of card there, you know, that's guaranteed that's going to give you a much bigger return down the road. But he's going to cost you a lot of money to hire.
Right,
right,
right.
So you have the choice of either hiring him or discarding him. Now, what I was thinking then is that somebody else, the next guy in turn, has the opportunity, rather than draw from the unknown deck, to pick up that Arnold Schwarzenegger card, or whoever your generic guy is, and because he's already been turned down for one picture, he might be willing to take a little bit less. So the next player could hire Arnold for his movie at, you know, 25% less, or something like that.
Right, right. Yeah, I think you could have cards with a good deal of information on them, you know?
Yeah.
Where you've got, say, at the top, first choice cost, second choice cost,
mm-hmm.
And then to have even lower than, like, on the bottom have return. And you could even have, that wouldn't make sense. Yeah, so you've got, like, return at the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
You could do that with your script cards as well.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So what I think would be cool is if you played, if you had to play your investor cards out.
Yeah.
So in front of you, so, like, the first phase, and you're just drawing investor cards, right? And you could sneak some other cards into those investor cards as well. You
know what I mean? Sure, yeah, yeah, yeah.
So you're throwing those cards down in front of you. You're playing those.
Mm-hmm.
And then you've kind of got, here's your resources. Almost like a mana thing.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah, so, yeah, sure, yeah. You could see it as a mana function. Yeah.
So that type of, you know, like, so I've got these cards down, so all right, I have to tap the foreign investors to get a little bit more money.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, I like that.
If you wanted to make it more complicated, because you know me, I always want to make games as complicated
as
possible.
Yeah, I like them simple.
You could put in a function with investors where you could possibly roll a die to see if you could get them to give you more money.
Oh, I like that.
But then throw in the chance of, if you ask for too much, they may ditch you, right? So that's what I was thinking. If you had them played out in front, you're like, all right, I'm going to ask the foreign investors or the Hollywood investors for, and there's a list on there of, how much more money you want to go for?
Yeah.
And you roll your die to see if you can do that. Mm-hmm. And if you fail, maybe they bail on you. I mean, if you fail, like, say it's a D6. If it's a 1, maybe they're like, see ya, you know?
Yeah.
But you could also have just a standard. They give you X amount of money every turn towards buying someone.
Mm-hmm.
That might be kind of cool.
Yeah.
Just because I hate the idea of, I've got an investor, a foreign investor, and you play the card, and then it's done. Like, I played it that turn, and now it's gone.
Yeah.
Because you're going to need a huge investor deck if that's the case.
No, you're right, yeah.
So
you're right. And you want to be able to reuse those investors, because theoretically, if you finish one picture and you make those investors money, they're going to be willing to invest in you again.
Right, right.
Yeah, that makes sense. I like that.
And you could set the game, too, to where it's a 5-picture game, right, or something.
Yeah, yeah, right. First time somebody completes their five-picture deal or something.
Right.
Then, yeah, right. Mm-hmm.
you could have two with multiple pictures that, you know, if you do well, one of your investors, some of your investors might stay with you. But if a movie flops, like, you know, they could be written in for some investors. Another way to do it, if you wanted to get rid of the dice mechanic, if you just wanted to have the investor cards, it could be first picture, success, you know, first picture, they'll give you this. Second picture, if the first picture is a success, they'll give you this. Mm-hmm. If it was a flop, they'll give you that. You know what I mean? So
right.
There's a lot of ways you could go with it. I think it's got a lot of potential.
I think so too. Yeah. There's a lot to work out though.
Right.
You know?
And this is an instance where you could keep the general rules extremely simple.
Extremely simple.
And then you just have the cards be kind of fancy, you know, in some cases. So, right. Which, as we talked about before, those are the games we really like because they're approachable, they're easy to play.
Easy to start, and the strategy comes in as you get to know the deck and know the cards that stuff. Yeah. Yeah, so I think that could be a lot of fun. And,
The other thing that might be fun, just thinking of the mechanic we were talking about from Lawless and from Stone Age... Mm-hmm. If the scripts were face up, there were like some scripts were, so everyone's like, they're trying to get money because they want to buy that script right away, right?
Yeah.
So.
Well, see, what I was thinking is at the start, when it started the game, everyone would draw, you'd deal everybody three script cards, okay? And then they could look them over and pick which one of those three they like the best.
Uh-huh.
And then everything that everybody doesn't want goes back out on the table for later.
Everyone can see?
That everyone can see.
Oh, that's nice. Yeah, yeah.
Now, I mean, physically speaking, you don't want to take up too much space on a person's tabletop. You don't want to have to, you know, cover a whole table with cards. We have trouble playing some games because they take up our whole table. That's the kind of thing. You would at least want to have that out there so people can pick it up and look through it to make that possible. Because obviously... thinking, sticking with the theme, those scripts are out there for sale in the industry, right? So if you want to read those scripts, you can.
Right.
Yeah. So, yeah. I think it's cool.
It just made me think of, you know, in some, in Hollywood stuff, it's common for companies to buy a script.
Yeah.
Knowing they'll never produce it.
Mm-hmm. Just keep it from somebody else.
Just keep it from somebody else. So
yeah, you're right.
That could be fun if you're looking at someone's investors thinking, oh man, they're going to make the big alien attack movie. And they're going to make a ton of money off it.
Yeah.
So I should buy that script for now. Option it for now.
Yeah, just to stop them.
You have to somehow be able to option a script because that's just a great term.
That'd be cool, yeah.
So.
Yeah. I like that. And, you know, and then down the road, this is the action movie. You could maybe do an expansion that's the alien invasion movie. Or, you know, movie or the Western. Or
right.
You could have more specific themed decks and stuff.
Oh, definitely. They could just build off the base deck.
Right. New scripts. I like that. That's new a good investors, idea. New characters, new actors, you know, that kind of thing.
I like that a
Which
lot.
Which I think could be a lot of fun.
So, I was just thinking about the optioning idea. If you included some sort of tokens, like just the cheap wood tokens.
To track money or something.
But it would also be fun if you had the scripts laid out.
Mm-hmm.
So when you option a script, you pay a price to option a script,
mm-hmm.
And if after so many turns you haven't completed the movie, you lose the option on that script.
Oh yeah.
So that kind of makes it a time sensitive thing, right? Like so many turns, I gotta produce this movie, otherwise, you know, the opponent could option it to stop me from doing it. Because that kind of stuff happens in Hollywood.
I read
about it. So that's kind of that might be kind of fun to be able to, you know, screw over your opponents in different ways.
Yeah. Could be good. I think it's fun. I think it's got a lot of potential. I'm not sure if it's something I'm going to pursue right now, but I definitely want to keep it in my back pocket because I think it's different. I couldn't find anything else out there like it. The closest approximation I could find was Colosseum, you know? And that's a real specific theme to that game.
Right.
It kind of has, I mean, realistically speaking, it kind of has a high barrier to entry. A lot of people don't want to play a game about putting on stage shows for the Roman Emperor.
Well, then, I mean, I like the big crazy games, and I know you do too.
Yeah, right.
But that Colosseum game does not sound interesting to me.
No.
Even a little.
I played it once, and I got it, and I liked it, but I'll never buy it because none of my friends will really have ever any interest in that.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, if it was like gladiator fights in a Colosseum.
It'd be different. But then it'd be a little more approachable. Too.
It would be a different game.
Yeah.
You could actually probably switch the mechanics to pretty much just map into one of those. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
But, I mean, they're picking something that's very, very, very small in scope for who might like it. Yeah. And, you know, we've talked about that a little bit with some of the pitches we've done for each other, just, you know, via email and stuff, that some of our ideas that we've had that are kind of our favorite ideas aren't necessarily that marketable. And that's, how do you, you know, how do you balance that? Right. Because you don't want to just make a certain kind of game because you know it's popular, right?
Yeah.
So, but you also don't want to make your dream game if you know no one will ever play it.
Right, then what's the point? I mean, then you're just making it for yourself.
Right.
And you know, and lots of artists say, you know, you make art, you make something that you think you'll enjoy, and hopefully somebody else will come along and buy it. But, you know, the people who are saying that, the artists are already pretty successful.
Right.
At some point, you got to start somewhere, you know, if you want to break in.
Right.
You know, so.
And I certainly wouldn't advocate, oh, let's just make this, I don't know what kind of game, but.
Mm-hmm. Like, Steve Jackson can make whatever kind of game he wants, because people are going to buy a Steve Jackson game.
Right, right.
You know?
Right.
But.
As evidenced by his Ogre Kickstarter.
Yeah.
Did you hear about that?
I heard something about that. I didn't hear all
the details. It's made buckets of money.
Has it?
Buckets of money. And that was, he was basically saying, if you want to remake this game that I published a long time ago, I'll publish it again. So,
yeah.
And I had never heard of it before. It's called Ogre.
Uh-huh.
But it's apparently about tanks, which was super confusing to me because it's Steve Jackson. And when it was called Ogre, I made some assumptions.
Yeah, me too.
It'd be like if the game Munchkin was actually about...
ogres.
Yeah. Or like, you know, Munchkin, it's about stock cars, you know. Yeah. I mean, it just doesn't... It just doesn't flow. But yeah, apparently people are gaga over the idea that he's going to remake this game.
Okay, well, good.
Which is impressive because I looked at the Kickstarter and it looked like it cost like $100 just to get the game.
Really?
You know, and because I'm looking, I thought, well, you know, a lot of people think this is cool. I like Steve Jackson games. So I'm looking through and I'm not dogging them. Obviously, they did good. You know?
Yeah, right.
No, but I mean, obviously they priced it well because a lot of people bought it.
Yeah.
But I was just surprised that... It was so high priced, but it looks like the game, if I was looking at it correctly, might actually have like tanks that you put together, like those old that pirate ship game there, the high seas game.
The Wizards or no, it was WizKids did that.
Yeah, it was like a deck building game.
But you'd
buy a pack. Yeah. It looks like they're like that.
Okay.
So that could get pricey pretty quick with a game.
Those plastic cards. Yeah.
So if you've got, you know, 20 or 30 tanks in your game, that could that could get pricey pretty quick.
Could,
so, plus whatever kind of game board you had to go with it. So.
Oh yeah, you need some kind of map.
This is where a 3D printer would come in.
Oh yes, listeners, we were both drooling over 3D printers today. Oh well.
Very much so. I saw somebody made a wagon that looked like a Koopa Troopa shell.
Oh yeah.
Like a, I don't know if it was like a baby cart or something, but I kind of want that for my kid now.
Yeah. That's cool.
Baby carriage. Looks like a Koopa shell. I mean, how great would that be?
Is it a blue shell with spikes?
It was a green shell with spikes. Like Koopa.
Yeah. Well, the blue shell's the one, man. That's the homing. The blue shell with spikes. When was the last time you played Mario Kart?
Oh, I haven't played Mario Kart. I think I have it on my... I got it for my Wii.
Yeah?
And then someone borrowed it, and I have never gotten it back.
Well, the blue shell. That's the one that homes in on you.
But in the old game, in the Super Nintendo, that was the red shell.
Is it the red shell?
Yeah. It could be the blue shell now, but back in the day, the Super Nintendo...
No, because I think the blue shell is even more deadly than the red shell.
Okay. I don't know how it's more deadly.
I don't know. I haven't played Mario Kart in a long time either.
I just know the red shell was the greatest thing back then. Okay. I saw a t-shirt that was like, causes of car accidents. And it was like two legitimate things and then like red shells. Uh-huh. Maybe it was like texting, drinking, and then like red
shells. Okay. All right. I mean, we have a computer here in front of us, so we could look it up, but I don't really care that much.
No, neither do I. Okay. So, if you care, by all means,
let us know.
Send us a nasty message about how Rob is wrong about the blue shells.
Please do.
Or I was.
Yeah.
I'm betting on Rob being wrong, though.
Thanks.
No problem.
Moving on, I guess. Our next segment is plugs. What do you want to plug today? What are you excited about?
You know, I'm trying to remember what I was going to talk about with plugs.
I know, I completely forgot too.
I completely blanked out. You know, I downloaded a new game for my iPhone. Normally I wouldn't mention this in the plug section just because it's not some sort of board game or some, but it's an indie game, by, Dice Hate Me Games, who normally make board and card games. It's called Lucky Dice. Okay. And it's just a simple, like, fun little game. It's a quick play. You just roll dice in this box, and then you try and make matches up, and you do it three times, and it gives you your score. And it's super simple, but it's really addictive. Because it takes like 2 minutes to play one game.
Yeah.
So I found myself just continually playing it over and over again for like an hour. So
cool.
Anyways, it's called Lucky Dice. It's free, which great. Is cool. And then it's got a link to some of their board game stuff on there. So that was kind of cool. Okay. I would suggest people check that out.
That's right
pretty
on.
Sweet. What about you? What do you want to support?
Well, you know what? I'm thinking in terms of gamer equipment here. Maybe not a game, but gamer equipment.
Sure, sure.
I'd like to plug Timbuktu.
Timbuktu, yes, yes.
Dude.
That's Timbuk and then the number 2.
Yeah, Timbuk and the number 2. Timbuktu. They're based in San Francisco. They are a company that makes bags, like messenger bags and stuff. And Jason and I both own a Timbuktu messenger bag. I've had mine for about a year and a half now. He just got his. Man, let me tell you, it is the most awesome bag I've ever owned. Because I kind of have a thing for man purses. I mean, I do too.
I get you.
Yeah. I'm a little ashamed to admit it, but I'm also kind of proud of it, which is why I'm talking about it here.
Right.
they make an awesome bag. It is super great quality.
Yeah.
I just can't. I'm so excited about it. There are so many pockets. It's huge, you know.
And it's entirely customizable.
It's super customizable. Yeah, it's great. You go to the website and you can design your own bag, basically. Make it look however you want. It's a little pricey. I mean, they're expensive. But it's the last bag you're ever going to buy.
Yeah.
It's so great.
Yep.
So I brought mine to Gen Con last year and was so thrilled with it. I've taken it on every trip my wife and I have taken in the last year and a half. It's so great. It makes me happy just to look at it.
No, watching you with it Gen Con last year and how you could fit 2 full-size board games in the bag, which doesn't look that big.
No.
You have like a medium, I think, which is the size I ended up getting because you did because it was a little cheaper than like the extra large. Mm-hmm. And I can't imagine what you would put in the extra large. Maybe like a scooter. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I don't know.
Because it would probably fit.
It's crazy, yeah.
No, they're super great. And I mean, I use mine every day. I take it to work. Carries my makeup and stuff, you know.
Right. Yeah, no, but at Gen Con, yeah, I had 2 full-size board game boxes in there, plus I had room for a couple bottles of water and other random stuff. We took a trip to New York, and I walked all around Chinatown with it, and I had, like, a tea set and a bunch of other crap in it all day. You go to Chinatown, New York, you buy a tea set.
You do.
I like tea.
I'm just saying you bought a tea set.
Yeah.
Then you put it in your merce.
Yeah, I did.
I was kidding about the makeup stuff, but apparently you were...
I'm married. I'm okay with that. I'm not trying to impress anybody.
Anymore. So you admit the tea set was for you?
It was for us. You know, the two of us.
Did it have like a girly pattern on it?
It's got it's white with blue flowery stuff. Yeah. I mean, it's Chinese tea set.
Okay.
Go to hell.
Wow. That is quite the thing.
Yeah. So I'm an idiot. Apparently.
So
anyway, Timbuktu, great bags. A little expensive. Totally worth every penny. Highly recommended.
Yeah. We'll both have ours at Gen Con this year.
So if you want to find us and you want to scope out our awesome man purses, you know, by all means, let us know.
Yeah. Highly recommend. So
cool. I think that's all we got for today. We've got a little bit of a shorter episode today than last week, but we'll make sure we come back next time with more awesomeness, more game mechanics to talk about. Any final words, Jason?
I do not have any final words. Maybe spay and neuter your pets. Work for Bob Barker, so
yeah.
Why not?
Yeah, good old Bob. Well, hey, we'd like to thank everyone for listening to Building the Game. Please come back and join us every week as we share our new ideas and what we've learned as we go on this crazy journey of becoming game designers. See you later, everybody.
Bye.
Building the Game is a co-production of Imminent Entertainment and Poorly Designed Studios.
All the ideas presented by Rob and Jason are the property of the Building the Game podcast.
Next time on Building the Game.
And then on the next show, we'll be like, oh, I've been playing Lawless recently. And they're like, he just talked about that in the last episode.
Yeah, so. Well, you're kind of a retard.
Apparently.
You've been listening to Building the Game, a proud sponsor of the Gen Con 2012 Evening Social.
Are you going to Gen Con and want to hang out with your favorite podcasts and friends? Come to the Gen Con 2012 Evening Social for dinner and a party on Thursday, August 16th.
Find out more details and get your tickets before they're sold out at GenConSocial.com.